Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guests tonight are Kip Thorne, a Nobel Prize-winning physicist and the Feynman Professor of Theoretical Physics Emeritus at Caltech, and Leah Halloran, award-winning artist who is the chair of the Department of Art and associate professor at Chapman University. And we're talking about their book that they made together, The Warped Side of Our Universe, an odyssey through black holes, wormholes, time travel, and gravitational waves. Kip and Leah, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to talk to you.
It's an honor and pleasure to be with you.
This book, I interview many physicists. I just happen to like doing that. And this one, this book, I have to say, had a totally different effect on me. The Warped Side of Our Universe. It first of all, it breezed right along. There was a sense of motion to reading it, a sense of movement. And it was fun. So I want to, first of all, congratulate both of you for putting out a really interesting, fun book on physics.
Well, thank you so much. That's what we were going for. Kip and I have had so much fun making it. We hope that the audience feels that coming through the pages.
I don't know how you can help it. It was like one of the, I had no idea what I was getting into when I opened the book. And then it just sort of breezed right along. And I was like, before I knew it, I was done with the book. And I had gone through so many adventures along the way. Now, how did you two first get together and decide to do this book? Kip, can you address that?
Well, let me let Leah begin.
Okay.
Since she knew me before I knew her.
Oh.
Yeah. Probably many people know.
I was going to say, yeah.
So, like many people, I had read his incredible book, Black Holes and Time Warps, yep. Einstein's Outrageous Legacy. It was a gift from my mother when I was in graduate school at Yale in 1999 to 2001. And at that time, as a young artist, I was starting to lean into using science as a subject matter for my artwork. Reading Kip's book gave me this firsthand experiential journey, and I just understood the subject matter specifically about black holes in a way that my studies, my courses, other works that were really informational and didactic and quite frankly, very cold. Kip, I felt, was giving me this like open invitation. And so it was at that moment that I actually started one of my main paintings, this 5-foot by 16-foot painting of a wormhole that appeared in my MFA show, was really inspired by Kip's book. So I had started collaborating with him 6 years before I met him in person.
And I noticed, Leah, that when I look at your work, stuff like solar, Deep Sky Companion, and other elements. You were already doing cosmological paintings. Is that before you even started working on this book?
No, all that came afterwards. you mean the book that Kip and I are working on? Yes. All of those, I would say that my work has always engaged in science and nature. It was really the start of my career in 2001, probably my first solo show at a gallery, I think it was 2008. From that moment on, I always had some sort of link to science, but my real passion and interest in my studies as an undergrad was in astronomy. They kind of work in tandem. So Kip and I have been working on this book for 13 years. So a lot of different shows and projects have happened within that time frame. The two projects that you mentioned, Deep Sky Companion and Solar, yes, they happened within this time frame of the book.
And you can really see the relationship between the art that's in this book and those pieces, and as well as other pieces of yours.
Yeah, I mean, I think the book is an extension of my studio practice. It's like it's an opportunity to do something that's very different, to have this amazing collaboration and friendship. But it's not completely, it sits outside of what I regularly do as an artist, which is make, you know, pieces that appear in galleries and museums. And I loved this opportunity to bring some of these ideas that excite me and excite Kip to a wide audience.
Kip, this book is a real, must have been a very different project for you. I mean, I know that you've written other books for the public, and I've read them. But this, you're writing poetry in this book.
Yes.
So you got to tell me, that's going to be a big leap for you.
I never intended to write poetry, but when we were first getting started, a friend of Leah's did a layout for the book in which she set some pieces of my prose, carefully crafted prose, alongside some of Leah's paintings, and I suddenly realized this looks like verse. This looks like stanzas of verse.
Wow.
And I had an epiphany. You know, I have a big epiphany only once every few years. This is one of my big epiphanies, that maybe I could turn it into poetry, into verse. And if I did so, maybe it would turn out to be a very different way of communicating science than what I had been doing. And indeed, it did turn out that way. It was not easy.
Okay, I can imagine.
Because I had never written verse before, except for an occasional love note to my wife. And I had always enjoyed the poetry of Robert Service, which had a certain powerful rhythm to it, a meter, as they say in poetry circles. And so I decided I would try to do something that was a little less constraining than the precise meter of Robert Service, but something along those lines. And that's the way it turned out, and with a lot of sweat, but a lot of enjoyable sweat.
Were you, at the very first, creating poetry like this, were you very self-critical?
I was self-critical, but I wasn't informed enough to know whether what I was doing was good or terrible. So it was only after we got a very good editor, a superb editor, Bob Weil, at Norton, the Liverite, which is an imprint of Norton. And he gave me extensive advice, and then and I got advice from others, and I did come to understand that this was going to be passable, and so I felt pretty good.
I think the amazing thing go ahead, Leah.
Oh, sorry. Mark, I was going to jump in and say, you know, one of the kind of most beautiful things about this book and being self-critical is that we weren't ever setting out to make the thing that you have in your hands. It started as a commission for an article for Playboy. Then we decided we would make it into, we kept calling it our little book for 10 years. I mean, we never set out to make this massive thing. And so I think one of the joys and actually reliefs of not knowing what we were getting into is that we were just, I think, joyfully naive and just loved working together. And so the book just kind of like grew and grew and grew. I mean, I ended up making a total of 660 paintings over this time.
It's an incredible collection of your artwork.
Yeah, it was a behemoth, but the joke that we kept saying to each other is like, who's ever going to want to buy this book except for you and I? But we set out to make the book that both Kip and I would be like our favorite book about black holes and time warps and wormholes and time travel.
I think we felt that we had both had enough success in other venues that if this was something that only we would enjoy, well, that's fine. That's
just
fine.
Yeah. I have to say, Kip, this is also the most personal book in many ways in the poetry, the written components of it. And for you too, Leah, too. I really felt like you were really putting a lot of your hopes and dreams where physics is going to go in this in such a personal way.
Yeah, I think it became personal for me in large part because I was collaborating with Leah. And we love each other. We respect each other. We enjoy doing things together. And the very process of working together was so personal, and that bled off into the whole nature of the book.
Leah, I have to ask you. I know the body of your work deals with this, but you're in this specific book, you're sort of trying to illustrate, and I guess illustration is too confining a word, trying to represent some of the most abstract, huge phenomena in our universe. It's an awesome task to take on. Mm-hmm. Was it at all daunting?
I mean, it's almost like when you're done with something, you can kind of turn around and look at the process. And all I would say is go back to what Kit just said. We have this incredible joy of working together, and that comes with an unbelievable amount of trust. And so when Kip is telling me something that would blow my mind, and I would sort of like make a painting, and if I felt like I was unsure, it was like to see his response and his reaction to the painting. I mean, we just kind of worked, you know, in a way that was so locked together that in the moments where I felt unsteady or unsure, I knew I could rely on Kip to kind of nudge me in the right direction. But there were so many wonderful moments in our conversations where Kip would say something like, okay, so it could be kind of like this. And I, you know, and I would say, well, there's one particular piece where Kip described something. And I said, well, what would that even look like? And he said, well, I'll know it when I look at your paintings, you know, like, it gave me so much freedom. It actually then was more open-ended. If Kip had responded, well, it has to look like X, Y, and Z, which he never did, you know, the parameters were very, very open. Then what it did was it allowed me to just respond in a way that was intuitive. We know a certain amount of information about any of these things, and then to really have an intuitive and immediate response to the paintings that I was working on.
Did you ever have to revise, or Kip, did you ever have to revise your writing based on the artwork, or Leah, did you have to revise your artwork based on what Kip was trying to say?
Only for
Yeah, certainly.
Well, did you have to edit out stuff? Because this is a huge book, but it's about the largest... the largest problems in the universe. So it's sort of justifiably a large book, but did you have to edit out stuff?
Yes. No, I removed stuff that I felt was not as compelling as it ought to be, and in some cases not as solid scientifically as I wanted to focus. So there were a number of things that caused me to edit stuff out, but not a lot of stuff got edited out.
And Leah, yeah, there's four gatefold illustrations in this. I think it's four, which are huge. And I just find this a really generous book, both in the prose and in the artwork. There's a lot in here.
Yes. I mean, that was one of the things that we were trying to convey to the viewer is the experience of the universe. And so the gatefolds that... that are over, I think they're a little over 30 inches in total. I mean, I love the idea that you could kind of be transported by the artwork.
And Kip, there are times when you use phrases like, I'm almost sure, or I hope. And there was a feeling like you're looking forward to the discoveries that are going to yet to come.
Looking forward to the discoveries, looking forward even more to being proved wrong, because when one is proved wrong,
spoken like a true scientist.
Yeah, you then are on the verge of learning something much deeper than you expected to learn, and so I really did try to convey a sense of what it is like to be a physicist trying to explore universe, and that we do. Deal with things that we do not fully understand, and we do struggle to get some sense of how good or poor our understanding actually is as we struggle to put the pieces together and get the overall picture of how the universe behaves.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guests tonight are Kip Thorne, Nobel Prize winning physicist, and the Feynman Professor of Theoretical Physics Emeritus at Caltech, and Leah Halloran, award-winning artist who is chair of the Department of Art and associate professor at Chapman University. And together, they produced one of the most enjoyable books on physics I've read ever, The Warped Side of Our Universe, An Odyssey Through Black Holes, Wormholes, Time Travel, and Gravitational Waves. It's interesting because the book starts out with really fun stuff like black holes, wormholes. Leah, you threw your wife in a black hole. Did you?
Oh, yes. Sorry.
Did you convey to her that was going to happen?
I mean, I needed her to model for us. So I said, what would it feel like? I mean, I think that one of the most real direct aspects of this book is that we were making something that was extremely personal.
Yeah.
And Kip and I both agreed that to have the viewer be transported along for the ride, that we would use one space traveler, and that would be my wife, Felicia.
Nice.
So this is like, it also plays into the fact that Kip's writing is in the style of poetry that you don't really see in a science book. And it parallels the fact that the person that we're using is not some anonymous space traveler, but it invites a kind of intimate view of the universe. And so if Felicia's experiencing the black hole, we hope that you will, by proxy, experience it as well.
She gets spaghettified. Now, later in the book, it really comes out that one of the major underlying themes of the writing of this book is quantum gravity theory. Kip, can you just address that? That's what you call the holy grail of physics right now.
Yes, it is. And it has been for several decades, but for much of my career.
Talk about what it is for the general audience.
So we have two great branches of theoretical physics. Einstein's general relativity, which describes the warping of space and time, as being the cause of gravity. But much richer than that, ever so much richer than that, it really describes how the universe behaves in the large, and it includes things like black holes and possibly wormholes. The other is quantum physics, which normally we think of as describing things like atoms and molecules that are very small, but in which there is inherently huge uncertainty in how they behave. Not uncertainty because we haven't figured it out, but uncertainty that is intrinsic to their nature and their behavior. That they intrinsically fluctuate in unpredictable ways, but ways where you can predict a probability for this, that, or another kind of a fluctuation. And what we have as physicists have been struggling with for some decades is how do you marry these two great branches of physics? How do you bring together the two sets of physical laws, which turn out to be very, very incompatible? And so there has to be some way that that nature makes a synthesis of these laws. And that synthesis, which we call the laws of quantum gravity, is the set of laws that we now know controlled the birth of the universe. They control what happens inside a black hole. They control the fate of any time machine that a very advanced civilization tries to make. We have strong reason to suspect that these laws of quantum gravity cause time machines to self-destruct whenever a very advanced civilization tries to turn them on. There are a number of things that are in our universe that are controlled by these laws of quantum gravity. And if we can figure those laws out, then we will be able to understand the birth of the universe, time machines, and so forth.
And the history of LIGO is in this book, too, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatory. But there's also something called LISA that you suggest, which is the Laser Interferometer Space Antenna. Are there plans for that already?
Oh, yes. LISA has been in a conceptual planning stage almost as long as LIGO, going way back to the 1970s. It is on the books as a mission of the European Space Agency to be launched in the mid to late 2030s. So there's something like, say, 12-15 years from now, and there's a lot of work going into the planning for that and the perfection of the technology for it. So it's going to be an absolutely marvelous instrument that is made of three spacecraft that track each other with laser beams.
Wow.
And through measuring the relative motion of the spacecraft, we will see the gravitational waves, these ripples in the stretching and squeezing of space that are produced by gigantic black holes and that are produced by processes in the early moments of our universe.
Leah, audience members, if you're listening, realize that Leah drew pictures of this. So I want to talk to you. This is amazing.
Conveying the essence of this.
No, and it works too. There's a tremendous amount of energy in your work, especially in the beginning with black holes and wormholes. But there are also some beautiful portraits here, including of Kip. There's Carl Sagan is in this. You actually have a group portrait of all the people that worked on LIGO. Are you working mostly with ink washes?
All the pieces in the book were done with an ink on a plastic infused paper. It's called a Duralar Duraline. And so the ink has this incredible fluidity to it. It can't soak into the paper like a watercolor.
Wow.
So the surface is just as important as the ink itself. A lot of people like kind of mistake it as like a watercolor, which then, you know, you have a kind of fluid surface and then the ink and then the water soaks into the paper. Here, the water evaporates up until you get these really gorgeous pools. But doing the vintage portraits of Kip and Carl Sagan and...
Wow.
And Stephen Hawking were some of my favorite things to do.
I thought they were fantastic. And the thing is, they're so contrasted to these, you know, when you're doing black holes and all these other things. All of a sudden you come across in the book these beautiful portraits or just a stack of books. And I want to mention, there's not a lot of math in this book, but there is several equations on one page that you painted. Talk to me about painting an equation, what that's like.
Well, I wanted it to actually feel very physical and visual, and so the actual painting is obviously much larger than what's on the painted page, but I tried to have a real variant in the intensity of the ink, so it doesn't look flat like something written, but you still get a sense of the volume of the ink and that fluidity in it.
They're amazing. Have there been art exhibitions now of your work, and with Kip's sort of poetry beside it?
We just had a solo show. The book came out October 31st. This 2-3 months ago now, the same week, the gallery that I'm represented by in Los Angeles, it's Luis de Jesus Los Angeles. They had a 2-month run of a solo show of a collection of about 1/3 of the final paintings in the book.
So are they much larger than you didn't do them to size?
I didn't do them to size. Most of the paintings are pretty moderate. Think about 1.5 feet, in all directions. There's a handful of pieces that are larger. Some of the pieces of Felicia, it's a lot easier to draw a figure when the figure is bigger. But compared to some of my other work, which I work in many pieces in large scale, these pieces are pretty moderate.
Wow. Kip, what happened on September 14th, 2015?
That was the day when, to our great surprise, our first gravitational wave signal came in to LIGO. It was what I like to call our human's first contact with the warp side of our universe.
It was an amazing day. I know a lot of people in the United States or probably the rest of the world didn't understand the significance of it, but that was a pretty mind-blowing event.
It was mind-blowing. It was mind-blowing enough that... President Barack Obama tweeted about it. So it was an exciting event.
You must have been tickled pink.
Yes, very much so.
But who was it that just said that there was somebody that just had a very matter-of-fact reaction who worked on the project, who just said, like, as expected or something like that?
Yeah. Well, there were very different reactions. I was more matter-of-fact than most in the sense that...
You just knew it was going to happen eventually?
I knew it was going to happen eventually. It was what I expected to see first. But for me, it turned out to basically be a validation that the things that I had put a huge fraction of my own effort and my students' effort into had really paid off. I'd made the right choices. And so it was a feeling of profound satisfaction for me by contrast with Ray Wise, my dear friend on the East Coast, who really invented the kinds of instruments that we built for LIGO, who felt profound relief because he felt guilt about how much money we'd spent and how many thousand scientists and engineers we'd brought in to work on this project, and we had not seen anything yet.
Yeah,
whereas the younger generation working on the project, those thousands, they were totally euphoric.
Yeah. Leo, just one question, and we're almost out of time. What was the toughest thing for you to paint?
That you struggled with? You know, it actually is the same thing that was one of the most fun things to paint, but it was the portraits. I wanted to, the thing about the ink is that you can't do another layer. So it's you had asked earlier if Kip had made quote edits. Like, I've never even thought of using that word because our process is so iterative. It's almost like every painting builds upon the other painting.
Yeah.
So I think the paintings that I struggled with and Kip would look at and say, that looks great. And I'd say, no, I need another one. are the portraits, you know, like I, especially.
They look so good. They look so good.
Like, yeah, lovingly wanted to paint Kip, and this, you know, Kip is so beautiful and cute, and you know, these vintage paintings, and I wanted to. I think those are the ones that I did over and over more obsessively. I felt a little bit tighter, you know, that they had to be right.
Okay, we're completely out of time. We're completely out of time at this point. Tonight, my guests have been Kip Thorne, Nobel Prize-winning physicist and the Feynman Professor of Theoretical Physics Emeritus at Caltech. Leah Halloran, award-winning artist who is the chair of the Department of Art and associate professor at Chapman University. Together, trust me on this one, this is a wonderful book. They've produced a beautiful, interesting, fascinating, fun book about cosmological physics, The Warped Side of Our Universe, an odyssey through black holes, wormholes, time travel, and gravitational waves. Kip and Leah, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Mark.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch.